Listening Library presents Given to the Sea by Mindy McGinnis. Read for you by Monica Felice Smith, Robbie Damond, Alex McKenna, and Sunil Malhotra. Chapter 1. Kosa. It is in my blood. It is in my bone. It is in my brain. One day my body will betray me, dancing into the sea. My mind a passenger only. The water will close over my head and I will drown. My death bringing a reprieve for those who are not me. This is what I've been born and bred for. The food passing into my mouth. The clothes covering my body. Every breath I draw. These are smaller offerings. Each a promise that I will endure. Bear my own cursed daughter and then succumb. How that will happen, I do not know. My mother suffered the touch of another at least once, long enough to fulfill her duties and bring me about. I know it was badly done. I see it in the faces of my keepers, these people who care for me without caring. I hear the small things in their voices. They worry I will not be pleasing to the sea, that my mother and her chosen mate created something less than perfect. I understand their concern, but cannot share it. Why should I care if the tides rise again, if I am only a corpse riding the waves? To live aware of your own doom is no easy thing. I spend my days at lessons, my body fulfilling the expected duties, though my mind is elsewhere. The keepers are worried that I have not prepared well, have not set my face in the appropriate response to their commands. Happy, for instance, is an emotion I cannot be expected to parade, but they tell me it is necessary. Melancholy, I excel at. My mother and grandmother had other lessons, ones to please at table and dancing. Proper chewing, proper speaking, proper walking. Only expected, of course, when we are in control of our limbs. My lessons have taken a different course. My other instructors quietly dismissed once I learned all that was expected. All except how to contort my stone face appropriately. The keepers have tried, their emotions chasing through their faces so quickly I can't keep up. My own trying to mirror what I see. They say to me, pleased, but look nothing like it themselves, and I am easily confused on this point. So I often retreat. My mind escaping the room where I learned to mimic emotion, returning itself to some well-ordered facts absorbed from a musty book, its scent still lingering on my fingers, a source of comfort. Their pages follow me through the day, their words imprinted on my mind. I know the history of my land better than the scribes, better than the royals who rule it. I can recite the names of my predecessors, from the woman who gave birth to me, all the way to Medali, one of the three sisters whom the sea gave back after the wave that took nearly all. Seaweed was pulled from their hair, their locks drying, as they worked alongside other survivors to rebuild what had washed away, not knowing they would be taken again, the first of the given. The sea waited until the sisters had married and had children of their own before it called for them. The price of its leniency, the blood of their line. For the children went too, and their children after them. The first twitches of their childhood pulling them toward the water. The final coordinated movements driving them deep into the waves. The dance of death, one their kingdom deemed the will of the sea. And so it continues. Their footprints in the sand, not returning. My feet now itching to follow. Medali's line, mine, remains strong. The other two sisters falling short. The last names in their column, females, who did not produce heirs. The ink that wrote them now faded with time. I rub my fingers together, drawing the scent of the book pages from them as my mail keeper says, sad. Sad I can perform, closing my eyes and picturing my name. Kosa. The ink slightly darker than my mother's name before me. Sona. Don't close your eyes, he says. I open them again to see my keepers, their faces so easily read. Disappointment.
Chapter 2. Vincent.
I'm sorry you have to wait, my lord.
Not a concern, I answer the guard. But my eyes are on my hands, the clean nails freshly clipped, the smoothness of my palms interrupted by the lines that Mada insists hold my future. In any kingdom other than Still, the future of a prince wouldn't need to be read in his hands. It would be clear in his actions. The preparations taken to ensure he sits the throne well, does his duty, leads his country. Somewhere else, I would be wed already. The announcement of my own child eagerly anticipated. The girl I keep on the side politely excused, with her pockets lined for her trouble. Instead, I sit outside the throne room at the age of 17, awaiting my turn to speak to King Gamel, my grandfather. Healthy, hardy, capable. At his side, my father, Prince Varric, already gray and lined, but still sitting in the lower throne. I shift on the wooden bench, and the trapman next to me slides farther away. The smell of sea salt rising from his clothes.
I'm sorry, my lord. Do you need more room?
More than enough room, I insist, patting the space between us. He's quiet for a moment, and the lady on the bench next to ours fills the hall with the clicking of her wooden knitting needles. One foot rests casually on the ball of coarse wool to keep it from rolling away as she works. She's assured, content. As a citizen of Still, she is entitled to speak to the king, and her turn will come. Eventually. I look back at my empty hands, and the lines that Mada the Seer wrinkles her brow at. Her answers to my questions are always vague and muttered.
Am I right to say, my lord? The trapman asks. Is that what you're called?
The words, it doesn't matter, are half-formed in my throat, but I choke them back. The woman's needles continue to click. Her hands are gnarled and work-worn, but her color is good, and the hat she is knitting small. For a grandchild, or great-grandchild. They are lucky to have her. I tell myself these things every day. Still is fortunate, still is healthy, still is strong. Years of peace and prosperity mean that the old linger and the middle-aged flourish, while the young inherit only boredom and aimlessness. Just, Vincent, I say, finally answering the trapman's question. No title necessary. You're of royal blood, the woman says, not glancing up from her work. It should not be taken lightly. No. My voice fades away. I have no words to explain succinctly, only memories from my childhood when I was called the baby prince, and then the young prince. And now there's a hesitation, a slight pause before acknowledging my rank. There is no name for the third in line, one whose hands will wither with age long before they hold the scepter. I've come to hate the blank space before my given name, the deferential glance of the servants as they search for a title that represents nothing. So I make it easier for them and for myself. Just Vincent, I reassert. The old woman makes a disapproving noise in her throat and keeps knitting. The trapman smiles at me, his teeth even, strong, and white, in a face lined with wrinkles.
I'm Aga.
He holds out a bent hand, gnarled from years of pulling in the crab traps.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?